If you've been harboring secret fantasies of being an international intelligence analyst, here's some good news. A study indicates that a crowd of average Joes and Janes can outsmart some of the best CIA analysts, even those with access to classified information. And they're looking for participants. The Good Judgment Project is a four-year research study that was organized as part of a government-sponsored forecasting tournament. For the last 3 years, thousands of people around the world have been making predictions on issues as pressing as North Korea's next move, so whether Russian troops would invade eastern Ukraine. Results indicate that their collective wisdom can be uncannily accurate. With me to share more about the project is Philip Tetlock. He's co-principal investigator of the Good Judgment Project. He's also a professor in democracy and citizenship at the University of Pennsylvania and author of Expert Political Judgment. Philip, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, you reached out to crowds to try to find answers. What's wrong with the experts? Why don't they give us good predictions?
Well, I suppose the first thing to be said about these forecasting problems is that they're really hard and that the experts do often make mistakes, and the crowd isn't infallible by any means. The crowd makes mistakes sometimes as well. But there are real advantages to drawing on a diverse group of people who make offsetting mistakes. And the average often proves to be impressive, but not infallible.
Where did this notion of reaching out to a large group of everyday people to answer complicated problems come from in the first place?
Well, the idea grew out of a National Academy of Sciences panel, which recommended that the intelligence agencies should start scientifically testing the value of the products that they buy for improving judgment. And I think you have to give credit to the government agency that launched this project because they did something you don't normally expect bureaucracies to do. Bureaucracies don't normally sponsor research that has the potential to be at least somewhat embarrassing. They're putting themselves on the line. They're demonstrating a willingness to explore alternative techniques that might improve judgment. And this is the first major effort to do that. They're basically taking up the challenge that the National Academy panel issued in 2010. And this is the tournament that goes from 2011 to 2015. And we'd welcome listeners who would like to volunteer.
So if I volunteered, what would I do? What kind of homework do I have to do?
Questions are really diverse, so I wouldn't recommend starting any homework at all until you see the questions, because they are really, really heterogeneous. I think the first thing to do is to visit www.goodjudgmentproject.com and sign up, put your name in the queue.
But then once somebody has done that, what kind of questions are they faced with, and do they get some kind of briefing, or do you just say, go for it?
We pretty much say go for it. I mean, people work under different conditions. We run experiments, and some people work alone, and other people work in teams, and other people work in prediction markets. So the working conditions are somewhat varied. But we're counting on the self-reliance and resourcefulness of diverse citizens, and each individual is going to get a little bit of the truth, and when you combine all those individuals together, it often adds up to a significant part of the truth.
So you have some questions that you've asked participants, and they've individually made their answers. You've aggregated them. What kind of predictions did they come up with that did or didn't pan out?
Well, you know, you've got to be careful about how you think about evaluating probabilistic accuracy. I mean, think about it as in poker. A famous poker player once said he could tell the difference between a world-class player and a talented amateur because the world-class player knew the difference between a 60-40 proposition and a 40-60 proposition. So often good judgment is a matter of moving your probabilities faster toward the truth than your competitors. Does that make sense?
I think so. So a question might be something like, it wouldn't be, will Russia invade eastern Ukraine? It might be something like, what is the percentage probability that Russia will move military forces into eastern Ukraine?
That's exactly right. So if you were an all-knowing information processor, if you knew everything there is to know, you could in principle, whenever we issue a question, you could in principle say there's a probability of 100%, and you'd always be right, those things happen. And you see there's a probability of 0%, and those things never happen. And That would be omniscience. That would be all-knowing. That would be godlike. And not surprisingly, nobody comes remotely close to that. So you're judging the degree to which people get closer to the truth rather than one side or another being decisively right.
Well, here's what gets me about how you evaluate that. Say the investigators, the people out there doing this, give their percentage chances of that event happening and say they come up with 70% likely, and the pros say 20% likely, and then it does happen. Just because it happened for real once, we don't know that it was 20% likely or 70% likely.
That's exactly right, and that's why you have to look at many judgments over time. We only get a clear sense of how good the foresight is of the crowd versus the experts when we look at large numbers of questions. When you say there's a 90% chance of something happening and it doesn't happen, that doesn't decisively mean you're wrong. There's a 10%.
Right.
Sometimes the 10% chance materializes. But if you keep saying 90% over and over and over again and it still doesn't happen, the burden of proof quickly falls on you to explain why your probability judgments should be taken seriously.
So do you just continue using the same group of people as a big group, or do you try to weed out and say, hey, these people look like they're predicting consistently well. Let's see if we can pull their apparently better wisdom and see if we get super wisdom from them. Or you probably don't use the phrase super wisdom, I would imagine.
Well, we use a phrase that's somewhat close to that. We use the term super forecaster.
Oh, okay.
And at the end of year one, in 2012, we picked the top 2% out of 3,000 forecasters, 60 people, and we put them together into five teams of 12 each, and they worked together. And they just blew the top off of our performance expectations. They essentially won the tournament in year two. And then we took the top 2% of the regular people in year two, and we created another group of super forecasters.
Wow.
So each year we take off the top 2% of about 3,000, and we put them into teams. And so after this year, we're going to have at least 180 super forecasters. And we're thinking of also creating some teams of near supers because we think the 2% cutoff is pretty arbitrary. And we have some wonderful forecasters who are performing, say, in the top 10%. And we think the forecasters who are willing to put a lot of energy into this do really well when they're put together and they work together. It's somewhat analogous to what happens when you track kids in school.
Now, I'm sure you're doing a lot of statistics here, but is it possible that the super forecasters are just statistically really lucky?
That's a great question. It's always possible in any given year that the super forecasters were just lucky. Now, if it was just luck, if the reason the supers were super in year one was just luck, you would expect that in year two, their batting average would come down. It would regress toward the mean. But it didn't very much at all. In fact, they actually got a little bit better because they were energized by working together in these teams. And you see the same thing again in year three. They're really holding up their performance differential. So I'm not saying there's no luck involved. There certainly is some degree of luck, but there's a big skill component as well.
And I got to ask, are these all volunteers, or are they paid, or are just the super forecasters paid? How does that work?
They're all volunteers, and those who commit themselves to doing a certain amount of work are given an honorarium. I'm forgetting on what exactly the honorarium is, but it's not very much. But it's $100, $150 for about a year's work. So, you know, we're not talking about getting rich on this. People don't do it for the money. People do it because they're curious how good they can become. They want to improve their probability judgment. They might want to improve their probability judgment because they work in finance. They might want to improve it because they're card players, because they're poker players. They might want to improve it for a variety of reasons. They might want to improve it just because they want to improve themselves. But I think the motives are pretty intrinsic. I don't think the money has much to do with it.
We're talking with Phil Tetlock about the Good Judgment Project. They recruit average people, volunteers, to make predictions about world events. They do pretty well. They compete with even CIA analysts sometimes with access, apparently, to classified information. This is Central Time. More to come on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Thank you. Hi, Rob Ferret here. You're listening to Central Time. Continuing our discussion now about the Good Judgment Project. Ordinary folks volunteer. They make predictions on important world events. They answer questions like, what's the likelihood that Russia would invade Ukraine or intervene militarily? Or will we see new gas taxes in Venezuela? You name it. Turns out, competing with other judgment projects, this does pretty well, harnessing the wisdom of a crowd of people doing their own research, no classified information, and making their best guess. With me is Philip Tetlock. He's professor in democracy and citizenship at the University of Pennsylvania, author of the book Expert Political Judgment. He's co-principal investigator of the Good Judgment Project. Philip, seems like good indications about the value of the wisdom of crowds here. I wanted to talk about some things that might skew it or send it off in the wrong path. You've got volunteers. They're self-selected. Maybe if the same type of people volunteer to do this, they might manage to skew and get the wrong answers, the wrong predictions sometimes.
It's certainly true that there's the wisdom of the crowd and there's also the madness of the crowd. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of when does the crowd contain wisdom and when does the crowd go crazy into groupthink land and conformity cascades and manias and panics. We do our best to give our team some guidance on how to behave toward each other and how to be open-minded, but there's never a guarantee that our teams aren't going to go off the rails.
Yeah, and we have both sort of referenced obliquely the book Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, when people with a weird bit of information sometimes go off in a very bizarre direction, and all of a sudden you have a bizarre tulip craze among the Dutch, I think it was. But so what if you've got a question, maybe kind of an obscure question? I mentioned gas taxes in Venezuela, and the available information, publicly available information, is skewed because one article got reproduced a lot or something like that, and you get a garbage in, garbage out situation. Is that something you try to control for?
That's definitely not something we can control for, because that's just part of the real world. The real world sometimes contains skewed information, and good judgment requires a capacity to distinguish useful evidence from pseudo-evidence.
So I wonder what we might start doing with this. If, as you continue this project, it holds up, these predictions are good, do you envision some sort of policy use where policymakers could use the Good Judgment Project to inform them?
Well, we very much hope that the net result of our project will be that the United States government, the president, and National Security Council and his advisors get the best possible probability estimates in from intelligence analysis. That's very much our hope, and I think that's a major reason why this research is being sponsored by the government.
Is this idea of crowdsourcing predictions branching out elsewhere? I could see maybe trying to do this with a stock market, for example.
You could extend it into the financial realm, and there's an active debate among economists about the degree to which the stock market is predictable. A lot of economists think that the stock market is a random walk and is inherently unpredictable. Our evidence doesn't shed light on that particular question.
And I wanted to get a little more into what we're comparing the crowdsourcing of knowledge or of predictions to the expert. And I know you've worked a lot in the past on the problems of experts making predictions. What are some of the things that might lead very informed experts along the wrong path?
There are lots of ways of getting it wrong. One of the more common ways is to stick too rigidly to your preconceptions and fail to update your beliefs. So if you're really convinced that country X is going to have a revolution, you're going to keep predicting a revolution even though one doesn't occur, and you might stick with that position for a very long time until you finally relent.
So how can we, when we're making a decision, whether we're talking about that individual expert or with something like the Good Judgment Project, how can we get some kind of feedback loop going to correct for those kind of mistakes?
That's one of the best functions of the teams. We encourage people who are in our forecasting teams to engage in something that's called constructive confrontation. Mastering the skill of disagreeing without being disagreeable. So it's bad manners not to correct somebody or to challenge somebody. So we want to inculcate those norms in the teams. We encourage people to think that way. And I think that's one of the reasons why our teams have been resistant to the madness of crowds or, you know, groupthink.
Well, you know, it seems like it might be easier if an everyday person is coming in and doing this than with an expert to train them to accept a challenge. Well, if I'm an expert, I've got years of experience in this region. How dare you question my judgment? Is that part of the problem with the individual expert?
It can be. I mean, there certainly are experts who are open-minded, but when people are ego-involved and they have a public commitment to a position, it's often harder for them to back off from it.
So what's left now in the Good Judgment Project? You've been doing this for a few years now. Is there a next step beyond what you've already done?
We've just been amazed by how good our regular citizens can be in these difficult forecasting tasks. So, and I think the intelligence community has also been surprised by the level of performance and by the degree to which it's possible to train people and help them team and work together to generate better estimates. So we're going to try to do it again. In science, replication is really important. Mm. We've replicated our basic findings three times, and we are going to be assessing replicability in a fourth year as well.
And it seems like the issues you've brought up, this would just be a goldmine for people studying psychology, group dynamics, business management. Are you getting a lot of attention from a lot of different academic departments here?
It is certainly a project that brings together people from different disciplines. We have statisticians, political scientists, psychologists, computer programmers. A lot of different talent goes into making this project work. It's a complicated project, and it depends on the goodwill and voluntary effort of our forecasters and some great academics coordinating it all.
And let's leave it. Do you want to make a pitch to people to get involved and sign on and be a volunteer?
Absolutely. If they would like to visit our website at www.goodjudgmentproject.com, we very much hope we can find a place for you in the tournament this coming year. And I think we will be able to do that.
All right, Philip, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Philip Tetlock. He's a professor in democracy and citizenship at the University of Pennsylvania, the author of the book Expert Political Judgment. He's co-principal investigator of the thing we've been talking about, this Good Judgment Project. And again, if you want to give rein to your inner analyst, check out the goodjudgmentproject.com.